Folks, we are 1 week out from the election, November 5th, and if you want to early vote in the state of Louisiana, today is the last day, and I think the polls close at 6 p.m. in early voting, so be mindful of that and take advantage of it. We are joined by Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Happy to be here.
Ron, there is rhetoric flying in all different directions. I mean, it is crazy. And I was just surprised to learn the other day that democracy is the casualty of the Washington Post not rendering an endorsement. I just did not realize the ultimate importance of that happenstance. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not sure it's just rhetoric flying around. I think there's some other things, too, that really don't smell that good. But so I think we're getting an awful lot of that. You know, this election has degenerated pretty quickly. And there's extremely sensitive emotional feelings on both sides. And institutions are being challenged for bias, and so we're getting a lot of that, and it's probably going to just keep getting progressively worse every day between now and next Tuesday. So we might as well, you know, strap on our seatbelts and get ready for it. But you know, the Washington Post situation is interesting because it, you know. We have a number of media organizations around the country that that have been, I think, you know, unusually biased in this election, and in some cases surprisingly so. So it's, you know, it's no surprise that they would have this kind of a battle, and we'll see what happens. Apparently, 200,000 subscribers have already taken their name off the subscription list. I don't know how that plays out in the end, but the whole thing is a mess, and the level of opposition and hatred for each side is growing in great proportions. And if we knew when it was over with, things would settle down some, and some of these divisions would heal. You know, we could take some solace in that, but we don't know if that's going to happen, and we don't know if the election continues for weeks after next Tuesday because of recounts and lawsuits and everything else. And so I'm going to shut up here because the more I talk, the more it's going to feel bad.
I think what it exemplifies, though, at the very least, and you and I have talked about this, and that's confirmation bias, right? And when you tell me that there are 200,000 subscribers that have fallen out, that's because, obviously, the Washington Post has endorsed every Democrat since 1976 when they started endorsing again, with the exception of Michael Dukakis. They could not bring themselves, as bad a candidate as Michael Dukakis was, to endorse a Republican.
Right.
And, you know, so when you look at things like that, I mean, it's just that's a 200,000. But in order to rebuild oneself as it relates to credibility, and as Jeff Bezos pointed out, that they're now polling below Congress persons who poll.
Right.
And you and I have talked about that as well, too. That's not a good place to be in when you're trying to sell subscriptions, you know. And I think the Post lost, what, $111 million or something last year, or some crazy number. I mean, it's nuts, you know, and we're seeing more and more of it. And I don't know about you, but I never really, you've been, you know, candidate, I've been candidate. I went through the process because that was the process, but I didn't, you know, stay up nights worried about whether or not I was going to get the paper's endorsement or any other publication's endorsement. I was going to do what I needed to do to get elected in spite of that.
Sure. Well, you know, I think what we're seeing here is not only does each side expect everybody to be on their side because it's the good, right thing to do. They expect everybody to be, you know, vigorously on their side, and just saying, well, I'm for this candidate or that candidate, isn't enough anymore. You know, you have to hate the other side. You have to stomp your feet against the other side. And I'm sure people listening to this will say, yeah, because the other side is so bad. And the other side is so dangerous. And the other side's going to be terrible for the country. And but that's the way people feel. And in many cases, their feelings are accurate. But we still have to have a country to hear when it's all said and done. And that's what we need to be most concerned about.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As long as you continue to report accurately and fairly, no one, I think, would think anything about this. But it's all very suspect for a whole host of reasons, as you just pointed out. Let's pivot to polls real quick. There seems to be some momentum building, but that momentum is in tenths of a point and doesn't really take anybody outside of the margin of error of any of these polls, does it?
That's right. You know, when you look at the national numbers over the last week, well, let's call it 7, 8, 9 days, Trump improved his position slightly. And I think it was more to do with Kamala Harris weakening than Trump necessarily strengthening. And I think that ended up improving Trump's position, but it's very slight. But then, you know, when you look at these swing states, there's 7 swing states. I put out a newsletter that averages all the polls and looks at where the polls are in the swing states. And basically, when it's all said and done, it's like you said, it's virtually a tie. Now, you know, the last average that I put out yesterday had Harris ahead in one state, Michigan, and Trump ahead in, let's see, it must have been 4 states, and we had 2 states tied. So yeah, and all it takes, because, you know, when you think about it, you know, these poll averages are in states are based on very few polls. A lot of the poll averages were based on only 3 polls. And in some cases, I really wanted to do it just in the last 2, but I didn't feel like that was enough. And the point I'm making here is that if just one poll shows something a little different than the other ones, it'll radically change the average. So when an election is this close, polling has trouble really getting at the precise differences. And we should never look at polls, and of course everybody wants to do this, but we should never look at polls as crystal balls. They don't predict elections. They just tell you where the election is at the time the poll was taken. And when an election is very, very close like this, that's important to keep in mind, because any little thing at the end, and I could give you a list of 100 things that could change this race, and that they wouldn't have been reflected in the polls. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is this is not one presidential election. We're watching 7 presidential elections in these 7 swing states. So it's not just like, you know, you watch a governor's race or the national popular vote, the presidential race, where somebody's a point ahead or 2 points ahead or half a point ahead. In this particular case, you got to go through that 7 times. And it doesn't take much to flip a state when somebody has a 3/10 of a point average lead, and that's what we're seeing in some of these states. So, you know, when you cut through all of it, what it means is this is a really close election. It for some time now, it's really beyond the precision of what most polling can get you, because you've got margins of error of 2, 3, 4 points in most of these polls, and when you're dealing in a race that's where one candidate's a half a point ahead, it's all within the margin of error, and it's virtually impossible for a poll to get down that precise. So we really don't know where this ultimately goes. I know people who support Trump think he had great momentum recently, and he did have he did improve a little bit, but I wouldn't call it great momentum by any stretch. And the people who are supporting Harris, they think she's going to win, and she may very well win, because both of them are in a position where they could win.
You point out in your most recent publication that turnout is critical. You say that turnout is not just a function of identifying and pushing voters to the polls. It's also a function of intensity of enthusiasm that supporters feel for each candidate. I know that the Democrats had embraced the abortion issue early on, and they continue to push that. Michelle Obama the other day spoke and really tried to cajole males into making sure that they fall in line with what she presumed the females were doing, you know, voting for Kamala Harris. Do you think that that abortion issue is still the ticket home for them?
Well, I don't know if it's the ticket home, but it's the best issue they have. And, you know, it was interesting, but 4 or 5 months ago, a lot of Democrats were criticizing Biden's campaign for talking about only democracy and abortion. And when Harris got the nomination, she was talking about abortion, of course, as all Democratic candidates are. But she wasn't talking so much about democracy. She was talking about other things. Well, now it looks like they're ending up the way Biden started the race many months ago, talking about democracy and abortion. And I know some Democrats are jittery about that because they're not sure they should be ending the campaign on just negative against Trump. They should be ending the campaign by solidifying and boosting their candidates' positives. So that's a fight right now going on within Democratic Party power circles about what should or shouldn't be done. Now, when you've got all these super PACs spending hundreds of millions of dollars, different factions of a party can end the campaign any way they want. It doesn't have to be just what the candidate wants. Because if they want to end talking about abortion, or they want to end talking about taxes or the economy or inflation, they could do it. You know, it's their money, and the campaign can't control it. So there's so many moving parts in this election and in all presidential elections now. Unless you've got a race where somebody has a clear lead and they're holding it and it's somewhat stable over time, everything is a jump ball.
Ron, Democrats have typically outperformed Republicans in get out the vote effort and having that machine necessary to do so. Republicans last time did not really push early voting. It seems as though it became, a mantra of the Republican Party this time. I know that you probably have been following these early voting numbers that have been reported. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I think Donald Trump made a big mistake in 2020, and then they continued that forward in 2022 in the midterm elections by urging Republicans not to vote early. They were convincing people that all those votes are going to be stolen, and don't vote early and wait until election day to vote. And it was a big, big tactical mistake because when the other side is spending a lot of money and a lot of effort to get people to vote, logically, you can just see how it expands their ability to get a turnout. I mean, if you just have one election day where you vote versus the opposition where they have 2 or 3 weeks of election days, you can see how they're in a position to get more people out to vote. They have more opportunity. And I think the Republican Party and Trump's campaign this time realized that that was not making any sense. And so they decided that they were going to support early voting and urge people to vote early, even though they might not like the policy of supporting, of actually having early voting. If you have it, you might as well use it for your side. And I think that was a wise move on the part of Trump's campaign, and I do think that it will help it.
I'm kind of divorced from the process, so I haven't seen the get out the vote mechanism or machine that they have in place. Are you hearing anything about that?
Well, I mean, one thing that is happening now is that, again, with the super PACs and political party organizations that are raising hundreds of millions of dollars, many of them are taking over the task of doing get out the vote. So some of it's done by the candidate campaigns. Some of it's being done by some of these super PACs. Supposedly, I haven't seen evidence of this, but, you know, we're not seeing a get out the vote effort here in Louisiana. That's only happening in the seven swing states for the most part. But that the money that Elon Musk was putting into the Republican campaign, apparently most of that is being used for get out the vote efforts. Now, what that means and what he's doing, is it just an online effort? Are they doing direct mail and telephones, having people knock on doors? It's hard to say. But, generally speaking, the Democrats use all of those techniques. And they use door knocking and phone calls and that type of thing. We really don't know what the Republicans are doing, but the Republicans do have one thing going on their side, and that is the strong Trump supporters are very, very strong in their feelings, and they're going to go vote no matter what. So that's why I say it's not just a matter of how much money you spend, tactically and mechanically trying to move people out and get them to vote, but it's also the enthusiasm that the supporters have for their candidates. Because without enthusiasm for the candidates, it's very hard to get people out to vote, even if you send them mail pieces and call them and knock on their doors. So you really need both to get it done.
A number of states have gone through a process of election process reform. And obviously, Chicken Little came out and the sky was falling and nobody was going to vote anymore. It was going to be so difficult. Those very same states are having record turnout in early voting numbers. Kind of curious, right?
Well, I think that's part of it, that more Republicans are now voting early because Donald Trump and the Republican Party are in effect saying, go ahead and do it, as opposed to 4 years ago when they said, don't do it. And so I think that's really affecting the numbers. So we don't really know to what extent where the turnout will end up. It seems to me that it will be at least as high as it was 4 years ago. And 4 years ago broke all records. So so I suspect you're going to see a very high turnout. And you're going to probably see more Republicans voting early than voting on election day than you did 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you pointed out, in Louisiana, we're not seeing a lot of this because most people believe it's a foregone conclusion that Trump's probably going to end up with somewhere north of 62-63% of the vote here in the state, right?
Well, in the last presidential elections, the average presidential vote for the Republicans was 58%. And that's roughly what Trump got both times he ran. And it's roughly the same thing Mitt Romney and John McCain got when they ran in Louisiana. So Trump really hasn't done better in Louisiana than McCain or Romney did. It's just that the Republican candidates have a roughly 58% of the vote in Louisiana in presidential campaigns. And it's possible that Trump will get that again. If he falls short of that, it could be an indication that there's some weakening there that might be apparent in other states as well. But But I think most people would agree that Trump will easily carry Louisiana with a lot of votes to spare.
7 days and counting once early voting stops in a lot of these states. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens then, because I know that they, in some states, they start counting these ballots beforehand, and we're starting to see legal challenges to all kinds of different things across the country. And I'm sure that this will probably go until December, unfortunately, in some way, shape, or form. Depending on how close this thing truly is. But we will be checking in with you, Ron Fauché, before the election day. So stay available.
I'll be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. We really appreciate you. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. You can just Google that, folks, and you can get a hold of it. Some great commentary there. Always taking the average of all the polls. Really like the approach. Check it out. And you can also catch him on Twitter and other areas as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser. Billy, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Newell. How you doing?
Doing well, Billy. 7 days out from the election, early voting ends today. I've not heard any issues. It sounds like early voting has gone without a hitch, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I tell you, I just came from early voting on the North Shore, and they had a line of about 10 people in line. It seems that early voting has really picked up, and in some areas have record turnouts for early voting, so that's a good thing.
What are you hearing about the election? I know you're always on the road. You never stay put as you travel around the state. What are you hearing?
Well, I tell you, 3 months ago, I was at the Republican Lieutenant Governor's Conference in Dallas, and they always give analysis of where it is then and where it's going. And, it's going to be that undecided vote, whether the supporters of the Democrats or Republicans of those undecided, who goes to vote and who stays home. And it's going to be that close in these swing states that are going to decide the election. And encourages and enthusiastic voters that get out in that undecided. And, it's hard to believe anybody's undecided at this point. But it's those people in the middle that aren't really focused on a presidential election, which is unbelievable. But they're going to those ones that normally don't vote, that turn out heavily for one side or the other, I believe are going to swing this election.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because the other day I was kind of just sitting in the den watching TV, and it's like, I'd like to see somebody do an episode of The Man on the Street and just go ask people who's running for president and see what the response would be as to whether or not people would be able to tell you who's actually running. And I'm afraid to say that there would probably be a lot that couldn't name both candidates, unfortunately.
You're absolutely right. Some people, when you get in a conversation, when is that election? Is it this year? So, yes, it's those people that are undecided, that could vote or not vote. Unfortunately, those are the ones who are going to really swing this thing one way or the other.
Absolutely. Now, because of the toxicity of this election, I know you made plans for a fundraising event for tomorrow night at the Jefferson Performing Arts Center of the one and only Singing Trump. He was on America's Got Talent, and he's all about hashtag Make America Laugh Again. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we thought it was a good time. Louisianans, we got to come together from both sides of the aisle to do what we can to make Louisiana the best it could be. And I figured we're going to need a little laugh before the election. So we've got Democrats, Republicans, Independents coming out. You go to BillyNungesser.com. We still got a few tickets left, but it's food and drink included. It's going to be a fun time. This guy is an actor from L.A. He looks just like Trump, and he sings and dances, tells a lot of good stories, and it's going to be a great comedian show. So to make Louisiana laugh again. So we're excited about it, and we surely could use a little laugh right before the election.
Yeah, this is going to be a long week, I'm afraid. I don't know about you, but I can't wait for November 5th to be behind us, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'm worn out. No, I'm worn out from the calls, the what ifs, what could be, what's going to happen if this happens or that happens. Does the House and the Senate flip? Does it stay? And there's just so many unknowns in so many close races. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night because I've got a lot of friends from both sides of the aisle that are coming out to laugh together, to have a good laugh before this election.
Well, I will be there, so I look forward to seeing you. Now, and look forward to seeing the show. I need a little levity at this point in time to carry us through for the last 6 days of this election as well. But anyway, Billy, thank you so
much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. We know you're busy. Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser. We will be right back, folks. We'll go to the talk lines, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We'll go to the talk lines. Mike, you're up. What say you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. The other night this comedian made that remark about Puerto Rico. I think, once again, Trump is missing a golden opportunity here. And I said the same thing back whenever we had the all the protesting about police with the NFL. But this comedian just gave him the opportunity to prove everybody right. All of his defenders and people who make excuses for all the things that Trump says is, oh, he's only joking. And he's not talking about all immigrants. He's just talking about the criminals. And now would be the perfect time to get in front of a microphone and say, you know what? I love Puerto Ricans. We need to support them. We're a country of immigrants, you know, all that. He could say all that, but he's not. And I think that's very telling. And I think it's because that's not what his base wants to hear. And I got a question for you, because like I said, back when they did the NFL protests, I thought that would have been a great opportunity to say, you know what, local police departments need to get together with their communities and gain their trust. And we're here to support them. That's all he had to do. But instead, he did the opposite. He used it to divide everybody. And right now, I look at him running on, well, the Republican platform is they run on crime. Well, I'm looking at New Orleans, and I'm saying, gee, I don't need any help from the federal government at this point. It seems to me the local police department has the trust of the community and is doing a great job. So I don't know. My question to you is, why do you think crime is down so far in New Orleans? Because to me, I think it has to do with the police department and the great job they're doing.
Well, crime is down in a lot of areas in the country. You go through cycles. It is, I think, attributed to some of what the NOPD is doing. I talk about that with Rafi Goyeneche all the time. Troop NOLA has had an impact. The surrounding police departments have had an impact. I saw the crime stats in Jefferson through September the other day, some of the lowest that I've ever seen since 1974. They continue to reduce crime. Their homicide numbers are way down. So you're seeing it through the region here. I don't think it's a coincidence that the sheriff in Orleans is complaining about jail overcrowding because they have more than what they are approved for by the city budget. You put impact players in jail, guess what happens? Crime goes down. So, you know, all of those that talked about the size of the jail should be 500, they were wrong. They know they're wrong because we see that happen. So let's talk about dividing the country. I hear that a lot. There isn't anything that Trump's going to say that's going to divide me from anybody else. I have my belief system, what I believe in. I think that's all political rhetoric that goes around. Now, at a more basic level, I wouldn't have my campaign event at the Madison Square Gardens and put a comic out there. Why? I want to finish on a high note. So I think it was a strategic area from the beginning, because guess what? No one has a sense of humor at this point in time. No one. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. We, if you saw the caustic nature that people have responded to Saturday Night Live because they've decided to take some shots at both Kamala and Joe Biden as opposed to Trump like they've been doing religiously for years now, it's crazy. People are like, I'm not watching Saturday Night Live anymore. It's become so, as long as you're beating up on the other guy, we're all good with it. But when you start beating up on us, you're dividing the country. I mean, we, again, and I point this out, look yourself in the mirror critically every day. You're not the center of the universe. Laugh. It's okay. We don't have to be that serious. Knowing all of this, though, if I was a campaign manager, there's no way I'd have a comic on that stage. No way, no how. It wouldn't happen because of the toxicity of this. And all you're doing is throwing a layup to the other side. The other side is taking it, and they're trying to run with it and make something out of it, ironically, you know, where Trump's position has been on immigration. Most Latinos are on that same. You look at almost every poll, the majority of Latinos are with Trump on that issue. They may not be with Trump on a lot of other issues, but on that issue, they're with Trump. And the folks that are here legally and the folks that are trying to get other family members here legally that are taking the time to do the right thing, that understands the construct of an immigration system, keep asking people, why should we apologize for having secure borders? Where did we run amok in this country where that's no longer acceptable? Every other country in the world tries to achieve the same thing without making apologies. But for some reason, we got to this space in this country where we're saying, well, that issue's dividing the country. Really? Have you looked at the polls? It's not dividing anybody. Now, there are those that don't like it. I would think that the majority of the folks that are here illegally don't like it. Well, that's not our issue, right? We have a system. Everybody has a system. We can't be all things to all people 365, 24/7. And we have to stop being a chameleon on this issue. That's why I keep saying just enforce the laws that are on the books right now. Because those laws are far-reaching, and they'll have a huge impact. But no, we have executive ordered and executive actioned our way around the existing laws, and then we want to blame Congress. What? You can't have it both ways. Just enforce what's there now. Plain and simple. Immigration reformation is about creating more pathways to citizenship for folks that are in this country illegally. Pay close attention to what they're saying. They want that to happen first before there's any promise of a secure border. That's backwards. You secure the border, and then you deal with the population that you have inside your borders right now, and deciding who the priority is to deport. And it would seem to me top of the list might be the Venezuelan gang members, Tren de Agua, right? That would probably be a good place to start. MS-13, they would be right there with them, right? And other gang members that we know who they are and they're in this country, they would probably be the first people to deport, right? And then the others that have committed violent crimes and things of that nature, why would we want to continue to support them? Why would we want to have to pay for them to sit in our jail and give them 3 square meals a day and the plethora of the list of constitutional rights that go along with that, the 8th Amendment and all of this other stuff, 6th Amendment, right to counsel, you're all paying for that. It would seem to me that if we were looking at this from a fiscal perspective only, right away, they would be top of the list. But when you hear the characterization of the mass deportation, does anybody have any Roddy, really even believe that we're going to be capable of deporting, who knows what the number is, 13 million? It's been reported 16 million. It's been reported as high as 21 million. I mean, that's the problem that we find ourselves in. We don't even know the extent of the problem, the extent of the challenge, to even know what the infrastructure is and what the dollars need to be able to accomplish same. So we can't even have really a legitimate conversation about it because we don't even know who's here. We don't have our hands around it. We have no idea. But those that are here that we do have an idea about, guess what's happening? In New York City now, they're shipping them to other states, right? They found a situation where they are spending millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. Cities are being overwhelmed by it. And we want to say that this is dividing the country. No, it's not dividing the country. In fact, it's coalesced the country because now you have Kamala Harris who wanted to have an open border, who wanted to eliminate detention centers, who actually castigated Border Patrol and Customs and Immigration, now wants to be the law enforcement candidate and now wants tight border controls, actually is even in favor of building a wall now. Really? And this has divided the country? No, it hasn't divided the country at all. Because the country has spoken and they have said this is not what we desire. Now, talk is cheap. Actions speak louder than words. We'll see if Ms. Harris is elected as to whether or not she's going to be true to her word. I doubt it. I don't believe it because of what she has been saying for the last 12 to 14 years of her career and where she stands on this issue. All of a sudden, she had a metamorphosis and she's pro-border control. We shall see. But it didn't divide the country. It's actually brought it together on the issue. We'll be right back. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's show. And just remember that today's the last day to early vote. So get out there and vote as well. And we have Ian Hoax in for Scoot. And he joins us. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Hey, good afternoon, Sheriff. We're going to talk to Dr. Patrick Porter. If you're always worrying and scrolling through negative news on your phone, doom scrolling, that might actually be damaging your brain. We'll talk to a brain health expert about that. And I'm sure, like me, Sheriff, you probably heard a lot of people asking, how did we end up with these two specific candidates? In this big country, how did we end up with these two? I've got some theories, and I want to hear yours. We'll talk about what are the factors and conditions that led us here, and we'll do that and much more. I got some great bumper music. We'll try to have a little fun 1 week till Election Day.
What is it that guy said? We're Dane Bramaged.
We're Dane Bramaged.